Simple orders, Hal. Find the enemy and kill him.
They attack us. No casualties. They're running hide in the mountains. So naturally, we chase them, of course. They smell like an ambush to you.
They get close enough to kill us, we'll be close enough to kill them.
Round trip by chopper, 30 minutes. That means the first 60 men on the ground will be there a half hour alone. Son of a bitch. Think maybe you ought to get yourself that M16.
Time comes I need one, sir. There'll be plenty of them lying on the ground.
Everybody, hey, we managed to get three of us together again. Ben, of course, is gone. What's his excuse this time? His BlackBerry crapped out.
No, he's
his neighbor's BlackBerry crapped out.
He's been out mending fences. I hate the Eagles, but I had to do that one.
when real life and cliches intersect,
right? You know.
Bad fences make poor neighbors or whatever.
All right, Ben. Yeah, keep us posted. Just let us know.
Interesting. I did once cry over spilled milk, but that was because I spilled it on my iPhone.
I can't believe he went through the trouble of like breaking down his fence just so that he didn't have to tell us what he's really doing.
Yeah, I had that thought too.
I'm sorry, guys. My house burned down. Yeah.
Yeah. Where's the match?
My house
gasoline,
burned down
fucker.
When I poured gasoline over it and lit him.
We'll never find out about that post-op I've been dating.
Speaking of pouring gasoline on things and lighting it on fire, how's the country doing?
I thought you were going to say something like, so Milo Yiannopoulos was on Bill Maher last night.
Pick your poison. I mean, you could literally pull any news story from the last like 48 hours and go like, hey, so that's a garbage fire.
You are live looking at the state of the nation right now, and it's just a dumpster with flames.
Yeah. Who, Neil?
Milo Yiannopoulos.
Yiannopoulos.
Yiannopoulos,
Frank doesn't hang out on the internet. Here's, you know what? This is brilliant. Yeah, this no, we need to play
really,
this. No,
I mean, really doing right.
Oh, do I got to pull? Do I got to pull a clip?
No, not really. I mean, this is what happened here right now is actually beautiful because the people who are on Twitter are convinced that the rest of the world is as on Twitter as they are.
Dude, that's a great point.
When in fact, that is not true at all. And if you ask people who are regular Twitter users if they know who Milo Yiannopoulos is, they will all say yes. And yet you heard this name and you were like, who, what, where? And that's brilliant. I mean, that's a microcosm of exactly what's going on in this country.
No, that's the same thing, dude. If I was on the phone with my parents last night, and if I would have asked them if they heard about that, they'd have been like, what are you talking about?
Well, I mean, maybe my grandparents would have seen it on Fox, like the UC Berkeley stuff. So maybe they would know. But yeah, I mean, and the thing is, every journalist is on Twitter, so it's this hotbed of things that the rest of the country isn't really aware of, but every journalist is, and it sort of drives the journalism cycle, and then people on the outside are like, who gives a shit? Like today they were talking about who's going to boycott the White House correspondence dinner. And I was like, this is literally the most who gives a shit protest in the history of protests.
Well, most of them like, are. The thing that they haven't realized yet is that if you protest everything, you kind of, people are turning you off.
Well, yes, it all becomes white noise. I mean, Frank, you're in the audio business. You know what signal to noise ratio is,
yes.
Right? Like, it gets, like, if there's constant noise, then it cancels itself out. That becomes the new norm. So the new norm is that every day things are happening. So you expect 4 freakouts a day. And if you get that, that's normal to you. That's no longer a cause for alarm.
Exactly. I was having that argument today with a friend of mine on Facebook. We went to high school. The next county over, one of their county board members put on Facebook, he was in like this beautiful couples contest, and the people that were beating him were a couple of lesbians.
Okay.
So he put on Facebook and says, the fat lesbians are winning. All of a sudden, my friend.
Oh, they weren't hot lesbians?
No. All of a sudden, my friend, who's gay, says, he thinks LGTB are less than human. He's got to resign. And I'm like, where did you get he thinks gays are less than human off of the fat lesbians are beating me in a, you know, so we had this argument. He goes, he should resign because he can't represent his constituents. I'm like, no, you can't say that. You can only say he doesn't represent you. You can't say he doesn't represent his constituents. He was elected very recently. Now, did what he said screwed up? Yes. Does he take it to his job? That's the question. And he's like, no, he can't do it because he thinks people are less than human and he should have to resign. So I said, wait a minute. Okay. So I can make the same argument. You know, let's say, Joe Schmuckatelli, congressman, professes a belief in a higher power. I don't. He doesn't represent me. He goes to church. He should have to resign.
And there are people who argue that, by the way.
But you know what I mean.
Yes, no, absolutely. Like,
you're making the wrong argument here. Is what he said reprehensible? Yes. Does he bring that to his job? If that guy that went to church and all that crap came into the county board meeting and started doing, we have to have the Ten Commandments on the front steps and the nativity on the thing, you know, on every street corner and God must be everywhere. Yeah, you fire that guy. You don't fire him just because he has beliefs on his own time.
Well, additionally, something weird happened in society in recent years where people used to just be rude or assholes. Now every sin of impoliteness is elevated to like a severe character flaw. It's like, oh, if I, you know, if some woman, you know, bumped into me on the street and I was like, watch it, bitch, or whatever, I'm no longer a rude asshole. Now I'm a misogynist. Now it's a flaw in my personality.
Right.
I have a problem with women. It's not that I was just a jerk in that moment.
Yeah. It's not people that, just, it's not I'm a jerk, you're a bitch. It's I hate women.
Right. So like, and I see this a lot, like many, so I say like many times that I hear stories about somebody who acted in a sexist way or in a racist way or in a homophobic way. All it reads like to me is that they acted in a rude way. Now, exactly. I'm saying that, like, I'm not, and so I'm in within that automatically. It's not that I'm defending their behavior. On the contrary, I agree that their behavior was improper. It's just that I guess I grew up in a time where that kind of behavior was simply considered rude. Like, you're just not a nice person. You
exactly.
Know?
And that's what I tried to get over to him. I said, nowhere in anything that he said did he say, gay and lesbians are less than human. He specifically said, these two fat lesbians are beating me.
Right. He used a kind of a commonly unflattering, stereotype of exactly. Lesbian couples.
These fat lesbians are beating me unmerciful about the ass.
my shoes fell off.
But because he said something negative about a couple of lesbians, all of a sudden my friend's like, he should resign. He can't represent his constituency anymore.
Well, because privilege has become such a sin, right. Then any chance you have to become a victim of something based on your sort of your identity you take that chance because that gives you a voice. That's why I call it, people get mad when I say this, but I call it reverse aristocracy, because the system of aristocracy was you were born with your, you know, your blood had a certain value. You were your count's son, so now you're a count. Or you were a, you know, lord's son and now you're a lord. And if you're lowborn, then that's your lowborn, unless right. you know, you're granted some kind of title or whatever. This is like the reverse. It's like you were born too high to be able to opine on matters of social injustice. You're a white, straight white guy. Like, what do you know about oppression? Now, granted, I understand what they're saying. Obviously, somebody who experienced things sort of has an additional perspective on them. You know what I mean? Like, if you're a soldier, obviously, you're more qualified to discuss topics related to war because you were at war and people who weren't, weren't. I get that. I'm not saying right. my voice is equal to a woman in a discussion about rape or abortion or whatever. But the idea that you're you should sit down and shut up unless you're a, you know, unless you're a, the biggest victim of oppression.
Right.
People use any excuse they can get to kind of climb up that ladder or down that ladder, depending on
exactly. what your perspective. And our people, and I'll say our side, because we're all three pretty conservative in our views for the most part, at least fiscally.
Yeah. So I know that's why I kind of like right wing more than conservative. Cause I don't really feel conservative. You know what I mean? I'm a filthy talker who drinks and, you know, enjoys right. naked women and, you know, vices. And I also support gay marriage and stuff like that. Like, exactly. I don't feel like a conservative person.
Yeah. Well, how does gay marriage affect me in the least?
Exactly. I'm more of a, like, it's, but I also don't like libertarian. That's the thing. Like, the problem is every right. label was eventually taken over by people who were right. way too into that label. So right. libertarianism yeah. now is the people who are like, I should be able to own a tank and, you right. know, fuck every rule and fuck every law. They made it kind of ridiculous.
Mm. Yeah. My basic party is stop spending my money and quit worrying about who fucks who.
Yeah, we need to invent a name for it, a neo-rationalist or something.
No, you can't put neo in there because then you're going to end up being a Nazi.
Call it rational sounds too much like rationalia.
Right.
he's got to get a new first name.
Yeah, but so, and by the way, that.
But this no, I mean, people make the same. Hold on, what I was trying to get yeah. to is that people make the same argument. And like, what was it, a few weeks ago when what's her name come out during the award ceremony and said
Meryl
something.
Streep.
Right. And people were like, Meryl Streep should shut up. I'm like, she's got just as much right as you, me, or anybody to say what she wants. We were just dumb enough to put a microphone in her face and let her say it to the country.
Yeah, I mean, my comment about the Meryl Streep thing wasn't
microphones in our faces too.
Neil, you broke up.
As we all have microphones in our faces too.
Exactly.
Yes.
Don't reach.
She has no less right than you, me, or anybody to say her piece.
No, that's absolutely true. The thing that bothered me about that wasn't that she said something. First of all, I like turning on non-politically oriented things with the idea that I'm not going to be bombarded with politics. Like, if I listen to like an entertainment podcast and they start talking about Trump, I go like, come on, like I'm right. trying to get away from this. So, and I also hate that people called her brave because she effectively expressed the only acceptable opinion in her profession.
Right.
Like, it's not like you're allowed to be vocally pro-Trump in Hollywood. So it's like, well, you know, she went, that's the only thing that's going to get you applause in Hollywood is to talk out against Trump.
Right.
And what she said wasn't even that intense.
It wasn't.
It was sort of vague, but that's how political arguments mm-hmm. work these days. It's right. like people will say something like, you know, I think, you know, my parents are immigrants and I love this country or whatever. And then people will the next day go like, fuck that person. They said, you know, they attacked Trump and they attacked all the rights. Like, the person just said, you know, their parents were immigrants. Right. Like, they didn't
That's the funny thing is that people are making the argument, you know, like with the ban or with the ban.
What it's called, yes.
Or because what was the big article this week? Oh, we're going to call 100,000 National Guardsmen up to round up illegal aliens.
And I, by the way, my tweet about that was in the Atlantic. I was really shocked that my tweet, because the second that story broke, I tweeted it out and said something like, how long before the story turns out to be exaggerated or bullshit? Something about it was really suspicious to me. I later said something like, if my bullshit, my bullshit detector goes off, if a story sounds exactly like what the anti-Trump people are saying Trump's gonna do, you know, if a story is like exactly like that, I'm like, this sounds kind
of
off.
Well, first of all, doing that is completely unconstitutional. You can't use the military in that capacity.
And then it turned out without
declaring martial law.
Okay. Well, I mean,
then it turned out it was, but then it turned out it was part of a draft memo that doesn't even.
Oh, like one of those
completely written by nobody with any influence on policy that just said,
and additional,
you know, right. It was probably one of those, if this happens, we'll do this type thing. You know,
do this. Yes. It turned into one of those. If this, then that.
There's a good article in the Examiner by a Twitter buddy of Neil and mine, T. Beckett Adams, and he really dissected this.
I don't know if Beckett wants to be known as my buddy. I give him so much shit all the time.
Sort of did a whole.
He's a good writer.
Yeah, he did a whole postmortem of this story. He kind of found his niche now in these sort of dissecting how these like fake or exaggerated story cycles have been going. He has a lot of those, and in this case, also the AP did something that's not factually incorrect, but I would call really unethical, which is they said that might, you know, potentially mobilize 100,000 National Guardsmen. Now, that figure didn't appear anywhere in the memo. What they did was they crunched their own numbers. They said, how many National Guardsmen are stationed here and there and whatever? And so if they that's all of them that's mobilized, that's 100,000 people. Okay. However, nowhere in their article did they mention that that's how they got the figure. From their reporting, it sounds like the memo says 100,000 right. National Guards.
Because they know people aren't going to go do their research. They're going to read the headline and bitch.
Right. So I'm saying, like, if I know that there's two National Guard battalions in Kansas and I read somewhere the entire National Guard of Kansas might be mobilized, then I know that's two battalions. But if I report that, I can't just say they might mobilize two battalions. I need to show my work, as they say. Like, I need to explain that I got that figure by combining these two completely separate sources of information.
Right.
And they didn't do that because, again, there's this rush to break the big Trump stories. And they even said that about the fucking Flynn resignation. This was like our Watergate. We did a thing. Let's pat ourselves on the back, because that's what they want. They want to be the ones that took down Trump.
Hey, well, I'll be honest with you. If what they're saying Flynn did, he did. They were right. He was wrong. There you go.
No, absolutely. I think Flynn fucked up. I think Flynn deserved to go. And that was where I got into a lot of conflict with pro-Trump people who said, like, Trump gave into the mainstream media campaign. I was like, what the fuck's wrong with you? Like, you know, you're always on Trump's side. Trump says the media's wrong and I'm right, and you agree with him. And then he says, okay, I think Flynn has to go. Your conclusion is he caved to the – why are you defending Flynn? I thought you were Trump's guy.
Right.
Trump's telling you I think Flynn has to go, and you're saying – instead of saying, okay, Trump says Flynn has to go, you're sticking with Flynn? Like, what the fuck? It's so – it's such weird logic. It's like whatever the media wants, I want the opposite. It doesn't matter. If Trump also wants it. If the media says oxygen is good, I'm going to stop breathing.
Maybe we should try that.
We just hold our breath until this all blows over.
Yeah, it just seemed so weird to me. Like, there's an Occam's razor thing that goes on, like, where it's like you're picking an overly
Hold on. You're probably going to have to explain that to some of our audience, what an Occam's razor is.
Okay, so there's two rules that I love. Occam's razor and Hanlon's razor, right? Occam's razor is that you know, all things being equal, the simplest explanation is usually the correct one, right? So, like, the simplest explanation here is that Flynn fucked up. He didn't tell Pence stuff and he lied and he was not doing things correctly. And that's why he was pushed out. The other solution, the other explanation is that Trump, who never caves to the media, decided to cave to the media specifically on this one thing, even though it wasn't true. Like, that makes no sense. Like, you're reaching for a convoluted explanation where a simple explanation also works. Sure. And Hanlon's razor, which also applies a lot to the Trump administration, is never attribute to malice what can otherwise be explained by incompetence. Okay, so usually someone is more likely to be stupid than evil, basically, is Hanlon's razor. And so a lot of times people are like, oh, the Trump administration is going to do this and it's going to do that. And like that executive order, like I think a big part of that executive order, that's funny. The immigration one, okay. the Muslim ban, as they call right. it. Right. I think a lot of the problems related to that were that where nobody knew what the fuck they were doing and they wrote it quickly and they whatever. It's not that they were like, we're going to fuck Muslims. You know what I mean?
I got a question. Because you brought up the executive orders. That's all you're hearing about in the media. Is there any chance whatsoever that Congress has maybe passed any bills and sent them to Trump to sign yet? And we just haven't heard about them?
I sort of doubt it because I feel like they would – because they report everything he does now. You know what I mean? Like every little thing he does gets a lot of press. The one thing I've seen so far in the Trump presidency – that I felt like the press was avoiding was his cabinet nominations that sort of passed largely unopposed. Like a couple of them passed unanimously.
Mattis.
And there were no, what? Yeah, Mattis. And there was another one, the Secretary of Housing or whatever. No, not Housing. It was, now I can't remember. But a couple of them passed like unanimously and a couple with very few opposition, with very few people voting against it. And there was almost no reporting on that.
And I, you know, I can understand that.
I mean, the problem I have, because there's a big war now between Trump and the press. Like, I think we need to date.
Oh,
this
come fight. On, let's be honest. It's not like he's not egging them on, saying, "Come on, come at me."
This brings us back around to the Milo Yiannopoulos thing because the thing is Twitter. Every journalist is on Twitter, okay?
Oh, of course. That's where they get their breaking news now.
Right. So I'm saying when I read this, I couldn't find the link later, but I read that 9% of American voters, not even Americans, American voters use Twitter for politics. Okay. Yet you got like 99% of the journalism and political class that's on Twitter. And that's where they're sparring with each other. But Trump's triggering the media and the media is going fucking apeshit over Trump. And everybody on the outside is definitely not interested in it getting so bad. Like, I don't think it's good that Trump's calling the media the enemy of the people. That's absolutely bad for the president to do that. I can do that. You can do that. Fucking another journalist can do that. The president doing that is not a good thing. That doesn't mean the press isn't shit. They are. They are really shit. And it's sad that we've gotten to the point where we have a President Trump that is saying things like that about the media. But you know what? They were entirely complicit in the situation getting like this. Like, we saw this. Go listen to our old podcasts from fucking the Obama years and how frustrated we were with the fact that nobody was calling him out on his bullshit. And, you know, everyone who was trying was being brushed aside and called a racist and called obstructionist. Like, we fucking spent years with that. And now we see what it led to. And, you know, instead of understanding that, again, they're blaming racism and they're, oh, it was the racist white guys. It's Chris Hayes from MSNBC said the other day, Gamergate is now running the country. It's like, you haven't learned anything, you fucking idiot.
What would he even know about that?
And he wouldn't. And they were talking about the PewDiePie incident, which is like, again,
they can go back through our podcast and find seven, you know, look at how much we joke about being Jewish. I'm sure they could find seven things on our show they're anti.
Yeah, those were jokes.
Well, there's several. The problem is that there's several competing factors here, right? One of them is obviously money, right? The people have to, the people who write for The Verge and Mashable and fucking Vox. And, you know, I can name like 15 of these things, right? Kotaku and Gizmodo and Deadspin and all of those people. they need to produce content mm-hmm. in order for them to get paid. And we know from Gawker, I mean, I don't know what BuzzFeed's fucking business model is, but we know from the past places like Gawker and stuff, a lot of the times you get paid by traffic. If your article drives traffic, you get more money for it. Right. So what are you going to do? You're going to harp on the things that drive the most traffic. And the way to do that is also to link every bad thing that you see together. So Gamergate is exactly the same thing as the PewDiePie thing, which is exactly the same thing as Brexit, which is exactly the same thing as Trump.
Let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
Do you think there's any such thing as a reliable news source anymore?
People ask me that a lot on Twitter. I sound like a fucking awful celebrity, but yeah, I get a lot of tweets where people are like, what news do you trust or whatever? I don't know. I just, you know what? I've said before, I think news used to be something you consume and now news is something you research, like you're meaning as a regular person.
Exactly. Because 50 years ago, you could believe what the news told you, you know, like they went out and they did the research before they reported on it. Now, you know, we've talked about this many times before. Now it's, we have to be first, even if we're wrong.
Yeah. I call it retraction journalism because who cares? Like you write the thing. If it's wrong, you can later say that it's wrong. Who cares? You can issue a correction. And by the way, they don't even call it corrections anymore. They call it updates.
Right.
And I fucking hate that. If you say Trump, mulling executive order, rolling back LGBT rights, and then you write update, Trump not mulling executive order, rolling back LGBT rights, that's not a fucking update.
Exactly.
That's
because 90% of the people out there have that first article and they're going to keep passing that. It's like the damn thing with the mercury and autism and shots thing. That, you know, the guy who first came out with that study has been what do they call it in the medical profession? Not disbarred,
but. Yeah, he lost his license. I think it's just called.
And it's been, you know, debunked numerous times, yet there's still a significant portion of the country out there that brings up that fucking, his quote research end quote as saying, these shots cause autism.
Yeah, Robert Kennedy's kid, RFK Jr., and fucking Robert De Niro are out there now offering like $1 million, $100,000 reward for anybody who can prove that vaccines are safe. It's like, nobody's dying from fucking polio. That's how we know
the only people dying from polio are the people not getting the fucking shot.
Yeah. You know, Penn and Teller had a really good, bit about
the DDT or whatever it was.
No, not that. That was about something else. DDT. Okay. Because DDT was banned. DDT was a pesticide, right?
Right.
That was banned for being poisonous because it caused child deformities.
No. That's actually not what it was. DDT was banned because it thinned the eggshells of the bald eagle or some shit like that.
But it also, I mean, it did also cause, there are sort of health risks involved in DDT. So Penn Jillette said, look, are there health risks involved in DDT? Yes. But if you don't use it, you're going to have 10,000 children dying of malaria every year in Africa. And that's worse.
Right.
So you do the thing that's not as bad. Like I hate when you say something is evil and people counter with, yeah, well, you're imperfect too. What kind of fucking argument is that? Like if I say Iran's evil and somebody says in Iran, yeah, but fucking black people get shot here by the cops and it's unfair. And I'm like, the fact that you're imperfect does not mean that you cannot call out evil.
Right.
Like you don't have to be perfect in order to call out people who are evil.
Yeah, nobody says anything about the black cops getting shot by the black people.
Whatever, even
or the white people getting shot by cops.
No, not even defending. I'm not even saying my point is even that. I'm saying even if we both agree for a second, let's set aside this disagreement and let's agree that every year in the United States there is, let's say, just for the fucking sake of argument, 1,000 black people are killed unjustly a year here. Okay, let's just say that. That's way, way more than the actual number.
Right.
But even if that's true. Even if that's true, we're still better than a place like Iran or a place like Syria, and we are entirely within our rights to fucking call them evil.
Right.
Like I'm saying, like the fact that you're the fact that a solution to a problem is imperfect doesn't mean it's not the right solution because it's better than another solution. And that's a big problem. Like people think that just pointing out minor flaws in something refutes it as an alternative to something that's much worse.
Right. Well, that's the other problem too, is that we're in a kind of society where we're going to bitch. We're not going to offer any kind of solution, but we're just going to bitch.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, and
this
and,
is wrong. And, well, how do we fix it? I don't know, but this is wrong. Yeah.
When people feel like they're on the, people feel like they're living through history right now, which, I mean, you know what I mean? Like, they think like, oh, this is going to be the time that I tell my grandchildren about how we went on the Women's March and how we did this and how we did that. And the problem is, like, a lot of them are just, a lot of them are just participants. Like, the word activist
right.
used to mean something. Now it just means like, oh, if there's a march, I'm going to go to the march, you know, or if there's a thing, I'm going to retweet it.
Well, that's, and that's part of it too, is that they think their voice is being heard more than it is, because I put it on Facebook. I have a following. Or I put it on Twitter. Three people retweeted me. You know, I'm, they must like what I say. And
my dad called me an activist last
night.
Because I'm planning to go to a public land. I'm planning. Oh, my bad. No, my dad called me an activist last night because I'm planning to go to a public lands rally in a couple of weekends at the Capitol here. He's like, well, good luck with that, activist.
Oh, really?
My dad's been a union. My dad's been a teachers union representative for like 30 years.
That's hilarious. Like, it doesn't even occur to him that he's also.
Yeah. So coming from him, it was hysterical.
Oh, you mean because you want to have your voice and opinion heard, you're an activist.
Yeah.
Look, because yeah.
Yeah, this is like one of the few things where I'll get up and do more than just vote.
So what is your feeling?
And
we should
Twitter.
Have more private land or less?
No, I don't want any of this shit sold off. It's beautiful out here.
Okay.
I think all of this, it's like Forest Service and BLM should stay that way. So that's the rally is for.
Oh, so you're in favor. You're in favor of big government then, man.
Yes,
I hate
exactly.
you now, man. Fuck you, man. You just want the government to get their nose in everything, man.
Get off my fucking podcast.
As I was told on Reddit, I won't quote unquote get off my government titty because I'm just as bad as a welfare abuser because I want federal public lands to stay public.
Yeah.
And
here's the thing about the resistance. Trump won this election because very strategic counties in places like Michigan and Wisconsin that voted for Obama in 2008 and 2012 voted for Trump. That's it.
Yep.
There's a lot of noise, all this noise about the fucking Russians and the anger and the media and the whatever. That's it. The reason Trump didn't crash and burn like in the primaries and then in the election, that's because of the media and stuff, whatever. The fact
well, if they would have stopped, if they would have stopped talking about him every 3 seconds, he would have fizzled away like a bad fart. But no,
right. So
everything
saying, like,
had
I'm
to be about Trump during the primaries.
The reason he even got to election night in the position that he is a very complex affair.
I get the feeling that he spent about a buck and a half on advertising.
There was a great chart that somebody posted either last week or earlier this week that showed like paid media for each of the primary candidates.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He got $2 billion.
And it was like exponential. More than any of the other candidates.
Yeah, he got $2 billion in free advertising during the campaign. Yeah.
Neil, you're breaking up bad. You might need to click out and click back in.
All right, let me do that real quick.
Okay. I'll say something in the meantime. Like I said, the reasons that he got to election night doing as well as he did was there were a complex reasons. That was all. The election and the media and stuff like that. He won basically because of that really small thing where certain counties just felt like voting for Obama twice didn't benefit them, and so they swung to Trump.
Right.
That was it. That's it. There's no, and all the, like I said, election hacking and Russians and fake news and all of that stuff is more about the loss of the media's ability to bury someone with a scandal.
Yeah, they're trying to come up. There's no way he should have won. Something had to cause it. Had to be the Russians, man.
Well, I think in general, the media is losing its ability to ruin people based on gaffes, and I think they're very, very unhappy. Like I said, I mentioned the PewDiePie thing.
See, I saw something about that, but I have no, other than apparently they went back through some of his things and he's anti-Semitic.
Right. So the thing is, PewDiePie, if anybody listening to this podcast doesn't know, PewDiePie is the most successful, making a living out off of my internet videos person in the world.
Right. He's a YouTuber.
He's the biggest YouTuber. Yeah. He's the biggest. He has 53 million subs on YouTube. He's a million. He makes $15 million a year making YouTube videos. And, you know, he's sponsored and blah, blah, blah. He's a Swedish guy. His name's Felix Kleisberg or whatever. And he lives now in England, I think. And he did a thing. There's a website called Fiverr. I don't know if you know about it, but like 4chan loves this website. It's a website where people offer their services for $5. And some people will just do anything for $5. He was making fun of a video like that. There was two like African guys, and they held up a sign that says like death to all Jews. And he lost his mind laughing at that. And so then a bunch of media people were like, okay, we're going to ruin this fucker now, and went and found all kinds of things that he had said, took them way out of context, jokingly, and things like they were like, oh, look, here's a picture of PewDiePie wearing a Trump hat and watching Hitler from one of his videos. And in fact, what he was doing in that video was making the point that the YouTube had this program where they were going to essentially hire people to like snitch on videos that violated the TOS.
Right.
And he was mocking those people by pretending to be one of them in his video and like wearing a Trump hat and like watching like a Hitler rally as though this was like and he's part of like ironic internet culture, you know, we'll say something like, you know, Hitler did nothing wrong or some shit like that. And, you know, just say it for the fucking lulz. And the attack that he got, now look, Disney dropped him. I get that. If you're going to be sponsored by Disney, you better watch your act or Disney's going to drop you. That I get. And even I said that initially. I said, like, I think he fucked up, but nobody cry about him because he's fucking set for life already. If he stops getting work today, he's never going to have to work again for the rest of his life. He already has many, many millions of dollars in the bank. But, you know, if you're going to be affiliated with wholesome companies, you got to be wholesome. I get that. But then to pretend that he's like a fucking neo-Nazi mascot and that he's the face of Trump and he's the face of Gamergate and he's the face of alt-right, fucking just ridiculous. And the one thing I'm happy about is that they happen to have gone after someone who has the power to defend themselves. Other people, not so much. You know, if the media goes after... If the media goes after someone that severely, they better be able to, you know, fight back. And he happens to be a person who can. And most of his fans don't give a shit about, you know, ironic jokes about the Holocaust and stuff like that. Most of them don't, you know, most of them get that it's just jokes.
Seems to be part of the problem now is that people can't take jokes anymore.
It's,
you know, if you make a joke, because a lot of humor has to do with making fun of a particular either person or group of people or something like that. No, you must be this because you made fun of us.
It sucks because there's two things that people ignore. One is that a lot of humor is based on the fact that we all share knowledge about things. You know what I mean? Like if I say, if I tell a joke that's based on a stereotype, the reason it works is because we both know what the stereotype is, right? Like otherwise it's that's what memes were. Before memes were a picture on the internet with text on it, a meme was something that existed in society that you could reference without having to explain it and everybody would know what it is.
Right.
Okay. If I say something like, fuck, it's hard to
if you said fuck, okay. No, it's hard to do. I think everybody in our audience knows what fucking is. Okay.
If I say, oh no, it's the law, you know, I mean, the cops have arrived, right? That's sort of like a meme. There's a grammatical name for it. But the point is, like, you know that the word the law, even though it's just an abstract word, means the cops in a certain context, right?
Right. Or that's pigs what, yeah.
Yeah, right, pigs. That's a, or like the bench, meaning like court.
Right.
Or stuff like that. So a lot of humor is based on that. You know, if, like you said, like two Jews walk into a bar, they own it. The reason that's funny is because we both know
that there's Semite, man. You can't make fun of the Jews.
Not funny because we think Jews own everything. It's funny because we know that the stereotype of Jews is that they own shit. Wait a minute, what's going on? You
want to
mute him or kick him off, maybe, and then have him like re?
It sounds like he's just like blowing his nose or something.
Maybe you should hang up on him and have him like reconnect. Can you do that?
Let me see if
I can do that. I think I just did that.
Yeah, I did too.
Okay. So it's not funny because we think that's true. Oh, I think Neil has to bow out. Well, so we can just continue our little dialogue.
Well, yeah, I'll try adding him back in. Yeah. Go ahead and keep talking.
Okay, so I'm saying it's not funny because we both think that's the truth. It's funny because we both know that people say that about Jews. That's where people mistake and say, oh, jokes, it's no laughing matter. You're normalizing these attitudes or whatever. And that's just not true. And the other thing is also humor is about taking risks. If you want to be funny, you got to say shit sometimes where you don't know if people are going to like it or not. And sometimes you fail. There's a comedian. He's now dead. Patrice O'Neill.
Oh, God.
And he said that. He said comedy is all about risks. When I tell a joke, like an edgy joke, I step out there. I put myself out there. I don't know if it's going to work. I don't know if people are going to get angry about it or not. But if I don't take that chance, I'm never going to say anything right. funny.
One of my favorite, you know, that brings up a scene in a movie. Remember History of the World? Part one.
Which scene?
Well, at the beginning, where he's playing the with Dom DeLuise and all that in front of the thing there, and he says that joke that makes everybody go, "Are you talking about me?"
Oh, sure. Yeah.
He goes,
sure,
"Wow, when you die at the palace, you really die at the palace."
And yeah, like I said, and also context, jokes, and in addition, like I said, there is this. A thirst for clicks and they also know that if everybody writes about a thing, then that kind of gets this sort of right. feedback loop of outrage, which drives even more clicks. So if all 15 of us write the same thing, PewDiePie is an anti-Semite, or this is how we got Trump, or let's tie three outrages together. Brexit, right. Trump, and PewDiePie, how the alt-right is now right. defining our world. It's like I'm getting fucking five levels of outrage at once.
You don't have to be correct if you're popular.
Right. And if, like I said, if everybody writes about the same thing, then it gives the impression that there's a scandal, that this story's big because right. everybody's writing about it. It's really bad. And like I said, the beauty of it to me is to always discover how little people on the outside of that bubble give a shit. You didn't even know who Milo Yiannopoulos was. That made me so happy, by the way. Not that I give a shit. I'm very agnostic about Milo Yiannopoulos. He's like a troll. He's a British Jewish gay, pundit, essentially.
Okay.
And he's a sort of a firebrand, and he intentionally says really, really offensive things and tries to, and he's really nasty, you know, like he'll directly mock, there was some trans girl at one of his things and he like directly mocked her. Like he's sort of a piece of shit. Like I'm not, but. The reactions that he gets are way disproportional to what he does. He's just a fucking piece of shit. Like I said, he's just and he tries to get a rise out of people.
He's doing it for the reaction.
He's like, there's that scene in Private Parts where they're talking about Howard Stern's ratings. And they're talking about, they did a poll of the people who love him. What's the number one reason they tune into his show this every morning? And the number one answer they gave was, I want to see what he says next. And then they poll the people who hate him and ask them why they tune into his show. And they say, I want to hear what he sees next. He says next, right? It's the same fucking answer. And Milo Yiannopoulos gets so much hate traffic. Like
it's not like out, Howard Stern didn't get a lot of hate and traffic for some of the shit he did either.
And you know, and he knew that and he used that. And so does Milo Yiannopoulos. And he went to UC Berkeley and fucking people rioted and shut his thing down and burned that whole place fucking. And there was a really sort of disgusting display of violence there just to prevent him from speaking. And then a bunch of celebrities went out and applauded the violence, and their school paper posted op-eds saying this is the type of thing that should happen, you know, the kind of the punch a Nazi crowd. And so that gives him way more attention. So then he went on all the news shows, and then he went on Bill Maher. He would never have gone on Bill Maher if he had gone to speak at UC Berkeley and nobody gave a shit, if everybody ignored it. He would never have gone on Bill Maher and spoken to a national audience and had been trending on Twitter all day. And he doesn't give a fuck that people write nasty stuff about him. He wants them to. He right. talks about going to, you know, he talks about going to Gamergate events and after that, taking guys home and fucking them in the ass. Like that's, he loves that. And taking, you know, he does photo shoots where he's in a bath full of blood. And, you know, talking about abortion, I don't know, like he knows people are going to get fucking angry. And so that's the thing he does. He doesn't care. Like he makes money off their anger and they so play into his hands. It's amazing. Like I just cannot. And every time I say to people, you should try ignoring him, they get offended. Like you're trying to shut me up. I can't be quiet at this injustice. And like I'm giving you solid advice, you idiot. He's going to go away in like 5 minutes if you just stop doing this.
Yep.
Yeah.
All
right. Anyway.
All right. Let's change topics from.
I mean, this has been kind of
politics.
This is the beauty of this discussion was that we spoke about politics without really speaking about a specific topic. It was just a discussion about why things are fucked up right now.
Now, what was this thing? Actually, I am going to stay on politics for a minute. What was this thing about fucking Mattis and a poster?
Oh, that I don't know. I don't actually know.
Ben posted this. Apparently, somebody put up a poster of Mattis and it said, "Make America Great Again," and somebody felt threatened for their life or something like that.
Oh, really? No, I did not see that, but that's, you know, again, that's typical of everything that's going on right now. Let me see.
I'm trying to.
Yes, we're now you're going to be treated to the entertaining sounds of us typing, trying to go to Ben's Facebook page.
Right.
Let's see. No, I don't see it.
It was actually on the uniformed ops.
Oh, I see. Okay. See that? I didn't know. That whole thing of, like you said, someone felt threatened because he put up a thing. Here it is. Oh, make killing great again poster.
Oh, is that what it says? Oh, okay.
But wait, where was it put up? Hold on a second.
It was at the Department of Veterans Affairs. Right. Local United States Department of Veterans Affairs staffers were left horrified after a coworker put up a Make Killing Great Again poster on his office door. It all played out earlier this month at a VA office building on Claremont Road in DeKalb County. I'm guessing this is Georgia. After a source inside the agency sent Channel 2 investigative reporter Aaron Diamond a picture of that disturbing poster Thursday night, he spent this afternoon working to find out what the agency is doing to ease workers' fears and hold the staffer who put it up accountable. I'm truly afraid of a VA staffer who spotted the poster and asked not to be identified, told Diamond. The longtime VA employee who asked not to be identified told Diamond she's terrified every time she returns to work at the building that houses the Healthcare Eligibility Center. The poster of on a third floor office door contained an image of Secretary of Defense James Mattis and the words, "Make killing great again." I thought that he would come in here any day and at any time and start shooting the office up, the employee said.
Oh, shut up. Ugh. That's so, you know what?
The chilling.
Talking about bullshit detectors. Hold on, before we continue, talking about bullshit detectors. That language is a lawyer language. That's right. Something a lawyer tells you to say because you want to sue, right? Uh-huh. Say that you were afraid, for your life and you couldn't sleep. Did she say she can't sleep?
We'll probably get there. Hold on. The chilling for some politically charged poster clearly plays off President Donald Trump's ubiquitous Make America Great Again slogan. The worker told us the poster only came down after she alerted her union. You need to be sending him to a fitness of duty to see what his mindset is, she said. Something needs to be done. Diamond obtained internal VA emails confirming upper management knows about the poster and the employee who put it up, but so far the agency won't say if it took any further action. I really feel like if was black or if was from Middle East, they would have took him out of the building in handcuffs.
Oh, I see. She's suggesting that there were no consequences for this guy because he was white.
Yeah. Longtime VA whistleblower Scott Davis works in the same building. No action was taken by any management official until I notified them the day after they were already notified VA employees, Scott told Diamond. Davis said the staffer who put up the poster remains on the job. The appropriate action for VA is to at least put the employee on administrative leave until an investigation is complete.
That's so weird. I mean, look. I would not have put, like, in my office.
Oh, here we go. To be told if you see something, say something, and you say something and nothing happens, and he's still allowed to come in the building and put all our lives at risk, then I have a problem with that.
Ugh. It's just like, and like I said, I wouldn't have done that. You know, this brings us back to our first point. That guy's just a jerk, right?
Right.
He's not, but like.
But he also like probably thought it was funny, like, and people can't take a fucking joke.
Well, or also, how about the boss be like, Bill, Diane is kind of uncomfortable, or not even Diane, be like, take the guy aside and go like, look, some people have told me they feel uncomfortable by the thing you put up on your office door, so maybe take it down.
Maybe take it down. Or could you move it inside your office maybe or something? You know?
The end. I had a thing when I was in the military. I had a really, really awkward incident where there was a girl in my unit who went through a period where she was sick a lot, okay, and she wasn't in. And there was a rumor going around that she was, like, faking it, right? And so one day her mother called our base asking to speak to my commanding officer, and I put my hand over the speaker of the phone, you know, it was one of those phone handsets of the phone. And I put my hand over it and I yelled to my commander and I said, it's so-and-so's mother on the phone. And he said, what does she want? And I said, I don't know, probably to make up some lie about her daughter being sick again. She heard me say it. And so she heard me say that. And so he went to speak to her, whatever. And then so like a couple of hours later, I get called out into the hallway and explained the situation.
Cover the phone better next time, man.
And told that I need to apologize. Now, the sad part is I really liked this. Like, this girl and I were really good friends. Like, I wasn't one of the people, because there were some people who were like, fuck her or whatever, right?
Right.
And I actually liked her a lot. So I felt like even way worse. And so whatever, my commanding officer was like, you're going to call her mother now and you're going to profusely apologize, and you're also going to apologize to the girl. I was like, I was horrified and did that, and that's it. And that, you know, I called the mother and I was like, look, I was goofing around, and I said like, you can ask your daughter, we're good friends and whatever. And
there wasn't a thing on Twitter saying IDF Force Corporal Noam or whatever the hell your rank is in the IDF.
Oh, now you're going to have to edit
this. Is against freaking women in serving in the IDF because he said a joke.
The only punishment,
you know, his chain of command is lax because the only punishment they deem necessary is that he apologize. He should have been kicked out of the military with a dishonorable discharge and fucking ruined for life.
Yeah. He's a sexist. He's accusing women of lying. But, and so, like I said, it was, a thing, you know, I did something really stupid, right? And I profusely apologized for it. The end. That's right. It. Like, what the what happened to the world?
I don't accept your apology. I don't think it's heartfelt. You only did it to keep your ass out of trouble.
And you know what? That's also what happened with PewDiePie. He put out of this video like, look, fuck the media and fuck the Wall Street Journal, but let me talk to you directly. I said some shit. I regret it now. I didn't pay attention to the things that I said. And like, he was sort of sincere. He was like, I'm really sorry. You know, if anybody was offended, obviously I didn't want to offend anybody. I'm just making a goofy YouTube videos. If somebody was offended, like, that's, I fucked up. And then there was a string of articles like PewDiePie's half-assed apology misses the point. And it was like, you see, like, you can never try, you know, you should never try to appease that crowd. If you apologize, do it for yourself. Do it because you think you should. And then that's that. And I have a feeling that, it, you know, if anybody was legitimately offended by him, they would probably accept that apology. To me, it felt, and I don't like I've never watched, that was PewDiePie's first video that I had ever watched, was the one where he addressed this controversy. I have no vested interest in him.
Right.
But I'm saying, like, if I had been like, wow, he's an anti-Semite, let me watch this video where he responds, I would come out of that video thinking like, okay, you know, he was goofing around. I don't think he's going to do it again. The end. I wouldn't be like, fuck him.
Right. This but then you can't, no, you can't keep your name in the news doing that, man. You can't become internet popular if you just accept his apology and shut up.
It's just, it's really, and you know what? The sad thing to me is that people don't see it. The fact that people do it, whatever. Like I said, everything bad Obama did during his presidency, the person least at fault for it was Obama.
Right.
Because he's him. He has his own priorities. Right. And obviously he's going to do his own thing.
At least he thought he was doing what was right.
Absolutely. Everybody's the hero of their own story, as they say. Mm-hmm. And additionally, like, so my problem was with the people who were supposed to fucking keep him in check and didn't. So the same thing applies here. Like, the media is gross, right? And I'm going to call them out on it. And these half-assed people who, like, muckrake and try to, you know, drum up outrage so they can earn a living. But the really sad part is that people just buy that. That rubes fucking eat it up. And, you know, they spend money. They hear that Ivanka Trump's brand is now not in Nordstrom anymore or whatever. And Trump got mad. They were like, I'm going to go shop at Nordstrom. I'm like, you're such a fucking sucker. Like, you're being marketed to. Mm-hmm. The demographic you represent is liberal outrage right now.
Like, pretty much.
So anything that can be, anything that can be made to be like a cause célèbre for liberal outrage, you're going to do. If people are, you know, donating to the ACLU, you're going to do that. If people are switching from Uber to Lyft, which happened, and that was, by the way, complete marketing ploy. Because Uber's CEO, what happened was this. Uber, there was a strike, a airport cabbie strike because of the immigration executive order. They were like, we're fucking not doing anything. So Uber was like, shit, we're going to pick up people, like, you know, fuck you.
People still need rides. I'm in business to give people rides.
And so all of a sudden, Uber were like, you know, how the union guys bring out the big inflatable rat.
Oh, yeah.
So that's what they were like, you know, fuck you. You're crossing our picket line, essentially.
Here's the podium.
And so the next day, Lyft was like, we're donating $1 million to the ACLU. Okay.
Yeah. But so by the way,
like, we're switching to Lyft now. Yeah. And so I tweeted, Lyft just bought $10 million of advertising with their $1 million donation to the ACLU.
Yeah. By the way, Lyft is still picking people up at the airport too, by the way.
You think Lyft grew a conscience overnight? Obviously not. No. They saw fucking opening and they went for it. Like, that's the most amazing thing to me is that people, especially the left, sees corporations as these like heartless, cynical entities until they're manipulated by them. And then all of a sudden they're like, oh my God, they're so awesome. Ah, Steve Jobs. Right. You know what I mean? It's like, you're an idiot. Like, you're literally, you're being manipulated. And it's sad. Like, I made this meme and it says resist Trump in big letters, but then in between them, it says like, so the, if you read the whole thing, it says resist the urge to get suckered into spending money or whatever on brands that were bashed by Trump. You know what I mean? Like, it's the words resisting Trump are the first and last words of a longer sentence.
Right.
That basically means like, don't let people sucker you into spending your money over Trump hate. You can hate him for free.
Yeah.
You don't have to spend a dime hating Trump, like because people feel like they need to buy things and spend their money in order to express their outrage, right. And that's fucking bullshit.
People and then the other half of people are saying, you know, I need to show my support for Trump, and I'll buy daughter's John, shit.
Those are called they in the pro-Israel community. Those things are called buy cuts instead of boycotts. Buy cuts.
Of course, Jews have something about in their culture about spending money, right?
You know, Frank, I'm expecting an apology from you. I'm calling Jezebel so they can write about this.
I wouldn't think Jews would have boycotts. They don't spend money. They only hoard it.
The thing
it's like people think Jews are dragons. We just hoard all this money and we're cheapskates.
It's done in response. So if people say like, we're going to boycott this business because they do business with Israel or whatever, there's a lot of people who say like, I'm going to buy their, you know, I'm going to make up the money that they lose because of you. I'm right. going to give them like, and again, I understand that. And if you want to support a brand like that, that's perfectly fine. I'm just saying, don't become that person whose spending habits are so predictable that they become like a prime target to be marketed to. If your spending habits are predictable, you're a prime target for marketing. That's not just in politics. If all I do is buy Gillette razors, then a company that's a competitor of Gillette, I'm their prime target for marketing. I'm a Gillette user. So if they can play up the negative parts about Gillette and make their own.
We're just like Gillette, but we hate Trump. Buy our shit.
Or, I mean, like Dollar Shave Club or whatever.
Right.
Like they go after Gillette a lot. They say like, those blades are fucking cheap and they sell them to you for a lot of money and we'll sell them for you, you know, to you for $3 or whatever. Why, you know, don't be a sucker or whatever. So if that's your thing, like then you're all of a sudden you're like, hey, I'm that person who's being suckered into paying a lot for Gillette razors or whatever. So if you're the person who only spends his money on anti-Trump stuff, then people are going to pretend that they're anti-Trump so that you spend money
on
them.
Even if they're not,
It's really simple. Like that's how the whole organic brand came up. Organic, for the most part, doesn't really mean anything.
Well, like, organic and non-GMO.
Well, I think now, right. And I think now maybe there's more about it, but like way in the beginning,
I bought a bottle of water. I bought a bottle of water last week. Literally. It said non-GMO on the bottle of water.
No, does it have any gluten?
Right. Gluten-free water.
It wasn't, no animal testing on our mineral water. Right. Like that's exactly it. Like it's all these, sort of marketing gimmicks. Like if you're, this isn't really from the consumer thing, but you know, ISO, what's it called? The fucking Standards and Practices Organization, ISO. If you can say your thing is ISO compatible.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
That's like a big thing.
Industrial Standards Organization or some shit like
exactly
that.
Right. Yeah. Like if you run an amusement park or whatever, there's some kind of ISO standard for that. And if you're compatible with that, that's a thing that you can like stamp on your shit, like a Michelin star. I don't know, whatever. Like I now have a thing where I passed this test, a Japanese proficiency test that the Japanese government does.
Right.
So now I have a certificate where I'm level 5 proficient in Japanese. Okay. So, but it's just, it doesn't mean anything. It's just a fucking, like, I just put it on my resume, right? Like I can speak basic Japanese.
Right. But you notice a lot of businesses when you drive past them, they have this huge ass sign that says ISO 9001 certified.
Right. Right. Exactly.
And everybody looks at that and goes, cool. And nobody goes, what does that mean?
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And so I'm the thing that I'm scared about is that political outrage now just becomes a brand. So now you're going to have your brands that cater to this right. political crowd, and your brand's to cater to this political crowd. Well, and the sad part is
we're already there because you have plenty of people that are anti-Trump just because he's Trump. Doesn't matter what he's saying, doesn't matter what he's doing. They're going to be anti-Trump. And in the same, let's be honest here, the same thing happened with Obama. You had your crowd that were just anti-Obama. Doesn't matter what he said, didn't matter what he did. Whatever he was doing, we don't like it. And Trump could come out and do, well, look at the frickin' Muslim ban, end quote. Did the exact same thing Obama did. When Obama did it, nothing. When Trump did it, well, oh, you can't do that. You're racist, you know.
And the sad part is because, and the volume with Trump is much higher though than Obama, like because right. so many visible media people are highly involved in it, the volume is much louder. And mm-hmm. The problem I have with that is that now brands that have no business being political become political because it drives a business. So now. Right. Things that, you know, I like that aren't political get political, and perhaps in a way that I don't like. There's a fucking there's a movie distributor called A24, okay? They're the premier art house distributor of movies. Every like indie, great indie movie they distribute. Okay. That they found their niche. I love A24, okay? Because I like indie movies that are good.
You like the product that they're distributing.
Yes, what they do is they find small like festival movies or whatever and pay to put them in theaters and on Netflix and whatever.
Okay.
And like many, many really good movies of the past several years are theirs, like they're the distributors for. So I was like, I need to follow these fucking people on Twitter. And I go to Twitter and their feed is just anti-Trump stuff. And I'm like, look, I don't like Trump, but if I want to follow a fucking movie distributor on Twitter, I do not want them tweeting about Trump. I want them tweeting about their stuff. And right. I got sort of depressed. I was like, ugh, this fucking sucks.
At least maybe occasionally you can do that shit, but it shouldn't be your prime focus.
And they did it. Their feed was full of it. And also, again, if it's a person, if you're a celebrity and I follow you and you also happen to have opinions, then fuck me. You know, tough shit. Like, I feel like the same thing. Like, people say to me, like, oh, I follow you for anime and then you do politics stuff. I'm like, what am I going to do? This is my
right.
thing. But the at A24 should just be like a fucking business account, I think. Maybe I'm, you know, I don't know. Maybe I'm naive.
No, businesses are people, man. They can have their own opinions too.
Yeah, I know. It's just, like I said, I feel like a distributor of independent movies maybe shouldn't be devoting many of their tweets to like attack the president. Like I just, right. And even if it was Obama,
right.
There's a lot of anti-Obama stuff that I found super obnoxious. In fact, one of my most hated things ever is to find someone I agree with in principle, but I can't agree with anything they say physically. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like somebody can say, like, I think, the right to bear arms is very important. And I say, yeah, I agree. And then they say, yes, because that way I can shoot brown people. You know, right. And I'm like, fuck, I was just going to agree with you. Right. And you ruined everything. Yeah. You know, shut up. Like, and I feel like that a lot lately because I hate Trump, but I hate the Trump haters. Like just as much as I hate right. Trump.
Exactly.
So they say something, I'm like, you shut up. And Trump says something, I'm like, you shut up. And I'm like, just everybody frustrating. Yeah. I mean, you know, the beauty of it, though, is that there is a group of people like us who are just sitting in the middle and going like, what the fuck? And like, I feel like we are coalescing as some kind of ideology. There's no name to it yet. But I feel like there is this group of people who are just so disgusted with everything as a whole.
All right, 2020, and it's the shut the fuck up party.
That would be great. STFU 2020. That's good. Instead of MA MAGA.
Matter of fact, I'm announcing it now. Me and you, we're going to be in charge. Well, you can't be vice president.
It should be staff. It should be staff, like snafu, staffu. Shut the actual fuck up.
Staffu.
I like that because we need something that you can kind of like say as a slogan, right?
Yeah, staffu.com.
That's going to be our thing, the staffu party. Exactly. It just, there's nothing, all we can do is sigh, right?
Exactly.
and try to ride this out. I saw a tweet today that really, really made me laugh. Hold on, I gotta find it.
You know, there was something that made me, I think it happened after our last show, but, we, apparently Trump had dinner with somebody, and this somebody came out and said, yeah, I sat down and all of the, gang leaders in Chicago came up to me and said, we want to figure out a solution to the violence in Chicago too.
Oh, really? Was it some kind of like, maybe the, it was some kind of reverend or something.
Right.
Yeah. I remember this now. It was some kind of religious figure.
Right. And I'm like, wait, you can get them all in a room together and you haven't been able to fix the problem. You have to kick it up to the federal, to the president.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, and so here's the tweet I saw today. It says, we are 1.98% of the way through Trump's first term.
Hey, why not?
And that's true.
Right.
And that made me fucking howl because it hasn't even been a month.
If it stays like this, do you honestly, well, of course, it all depends on who the Democrats throw up for the next election.
They're talking about John Kerry now. I was like, can you run anybody who hasn't lost a presidential election? It's ridiculous. I mean, and you know, and I don't know what's going to happen with the Republicans. Like you, right. Maybe they're going to primary someone against and it's happened before, I believe.
It's rare, but it has happened before. Yeah.
I think it's happened. I remember looking into it. It's happened a few times, but two of the times that it happened, it wasn't against an elected incumbent. It was against an incumbent who became president because the president was either assassinated or Ford died in office.
And stuff. You're like, I think somebody ran against Ford.
Yeah, and also like in the 19th, I'm very bad at U.S. presidents, but I think Harrison, I think, died in office.
Right.
He was either assassinated or he died.
He died. He was the one that got the flu and died like 3 weeks in or
like
something.
30, like, yeah, like 37 days or whatever, right, into his office. And I believe that his vice president was the incumbent and was then primaried and lost the primary,
right,
of his own party for the next. But it also did happen once with an elected incumbent, where he primaried and lost the primary of his own party for election. And you know what? That might happen. Who knows? I mean, Trump's approval rating is really bad.
I know LBJ chose not to run.
It was, I mean, I can look it up now.
He could have ran for another term after his, because he took over more than halfway through JFK's term. So he could have ran for another term, but after he finished out JFK's and did one of his own, then he chose not to run again.
Yes, there is. Here. It's incumbents that lost. There were five of them, but I do believe that.
I don't know if it was anybody in the 20th century.
Wait, what is this?
Except
no,
maybe.
No. I got this wrong. No, I wanted a. Yeah, denied the party nomination is the one that I was looking for.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so it says here, James Buchanan.
Okay, way back in the day.
It says John Tyler became president after Harrison died.
Right.
And so then he lost the primary,
right,
to someone else. And then Millard Fillmore.
Back in the day.
Yeah, and then like Andrew Johnson and Chester E. Arthur. Like it was all like 19th century, effectively.
18th, 19th, yeah.
But I would argue that this is, because you know, sometimes you read about like weird presidencies in the 19th century. You're like, that's weird. Like I feel like we're in one of those now where like 500 years in the future, it'll be like, oh, the 45th president, Donald Trump, who was a, it's going to be one of those like weird anecdotal stories about a weird president.
Yeah. The most ineffectual president ever.
Look, his approval, there was an interesting poll that said that his approval rating is really, really bad, but the GOP's approval rating among its own voters is very high. So like, leaving the party in droves. Right. That's the thing. It's like Trump isn't driving people away from the party.
Right. But we saw the exact same thing for Obama. be honest with you. His approval ratings were fair to middling most of the time. But if you split it down to political party, like 90% of the Democrats said, oh, he's doing a great job. And like 10% of the Republicans said he's doing a great job. So.
So yeah, I mean it's really hard to know.
We've completely lost the art of the compromise, and it's gone. I don't know if we're ever going to get it back again. I think we're just going to stumble through the rest of this thing, saying I hate the person who's in office right now, or I love the person who's office right now. There can be no more. Okay, I don't agree with the guy on everything, but on this, and this, at least he's trying to do something along the lines of what I believe, and I should support him on this issue. No, can't do that. I don't like the person. I can't support him no matter what. You know.
Right, and it's just moving further away. Like, the Democrats are now like, we need to be way more progressive. Instead of saying, like, you know, we're losing touch with a pretty big part of the country, apparently. Like, we're apparently out of tune with people who voted for Obama twice. Could you imagine somebody who voted for Obama twice and then voted for Trump? Like, that's how disillusioned they became with the Democrat philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
That they voted for Trump, not just any Republican. Cause like there was this whole notion that Trump was such an extreme figure, not an extreme conservative, but like an extreme figure, that sort of moderates or kind of swing voters would be less inclined to vote for him. And yet you get all these fucking Rust Belt people who, like I said, voted for Obama not just once, twice. Because you vote for him once, you know what? 2008, he's a super rising star, first black president, you know, amazing. And then the whole McCain-Palin thing, which kind of made his opposition seem kind of stuffy and also kind of weird.
Right.
But the second time around, you had to be like a believer to vote.
Who did he even run again? Who did he run against in the second time?
Romney.
Who?
Romney.
Oh, Mitt Romney. That's right.
Yeah, and that's where the whole Russia thing came, where he was mocked out of the race because he said Russia's dangerous, and now, oh gee, look what fucking happened. Russia's the big deal now. But I'm saying, like, that election, I felt like Romney and Ryan were not a fantastic card, or ticket card is a box right. term. But
why not?
I thought, had the potential, were not this, like, you know, rabidly socially conservative Bush type. Even though Bush wasn't, but I mean, like, the people around Bush, there was more of an air of like, these people are like socially conservatives. There was less of an air of that from the Romney campaign, but people still, Obama was a powerful incumbent. And apparently a lot of people voted for him twice.
Right.
And then some of those people in very key areas that Hillary chose to ignore in her campaign were like, fuck it, we're going to vote Trump. Like, that's pretty crazy. Like, yeah,
or just as bad, I'm not going to vote.
Sure. But I don't know. I don't think it was that. I really think a lot of people actually voted for the other guy. I don't think there was a massive shift in like voter turnout so that you could say like, well, everybody who voted Obama just stayed home.
There was a lot less turnout in this one all total than there was in the other one.
Yes, absolutely.
In the last two, and I think that,
except for California, where a lot of people showed up just to sort of buffet Hillary's like popular vote win.
Right.
But again, what's she going to do? Win California twice? Like, she, right. You know, you won. But that's why a lot of people hate the Electoral College. But another thing is, and you're not, I'm a coastal urbanite. Like, I lived in like Boston and New York and Washington DC. So I don't know if where you are, the image of that is different. But the idea that someone would vote for Obama twice and then for Trump is effectively imaginary.
Well, I live in
here.
Hold on. In these areas. Well, we get the same thing. I mean, look, I live in Illinois.
Right.
We have the same problem with one city basically dictating what the entire state's going to do. If you look at the voting patterns for Illinois for president for the last, probably 30 years. county wise, like there's I believe 101 counties in Illinois. 95 of them vote primarily Republican. 6 vote Democrat, but unfortunately those 6 are Chicago and the collar counties where everybody right, fucking they have lives,
all the,
you know?
All the people, right.
So,
but I'm not even saying that. I'm just saying the idea that somebody's political opinions are such that they can swing from Obama to Trump. I don't know anybody like that in my life. The people I know in my life are either liberals or they're conservatives. I mean, generally speaking, meaning they would either vote for the Democrat or they would vote for the Republican. But they would not, you know, they would not approach each election and say, like, am I going to vote Democrat or Republican this time? You know what I mean? And yet, apparently out there, there are a lot of people like that.
Or the other explanation is we're less scared of him than we are of her.
I mean, maybe. I don't know. Like, that's a thing that, you know, there's a lot of, like, deep data diving to be done on this stuff. Like,
right.
Why, you know, did you vote for Obama in 2012 and Trump in 2016? If so, why? What was the thing that drove you or whatever? But, and there are some reporters, you know, who go and go to those places and talk to those people. And I don't know if there's a, like I said, I don't think there's a simple answer. I'm just saying that it's just indicative of how where I live, which is where all the politics is and all the media is, that thing doesn't exist. And so people don't think it's possible.
Maybe we're lucky and this is just the beginning of, like some people said, this is the beginning of the I'm sick of career politicians election.
I mean, maybe. I don't know. Because, like, I saw...
Maybe a lot of people looked at Trump and said, he can't fuck it up any worse than these guys have.
Well, the problem is also who's making the proposal. Because, like, for instance, there's this whole thing about Trump and Gorsuch, the Supreme Court nominee.
Right.
And people said, like, maybe it's time to consider Supreme Court justice term limits. So now, I might agree with that notion in general, but the fact that they're just saying that because it's Trump's nominee makes me angry.
Well, that would take one hell of a constitutional convention.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know the procedure necessary. I'm just saying it's harder to get me on board if you would never said this until this situation. If you were always a let's limit, because I've always been a let's limit congressional and senatorial term limits, or it more accurate would be to say, go back.
The specific reason why the founding fathers said that Supreme Court justices will have a lifetime appointment is that they're supposed to be a check on political power. That way, like, a president can't come in and just stack the deck. You know, and if you're term limiting Supreme Court justices, then, you know, every president can come in, if he sticks around long enough, he can stack the Supreme Court.
I mean, there's exactly ways like to combat that. You can stagger the rotation.
Right, but even so then, he's still going to be electing or putting in 2 or 3 term. I actually...
Not necessarily. Let's say the term limit is like, I don't know, because you can put the term limit at, like, you know, 15 years, meaning not in the same way that a congressman or a senator has to get reelected, meaning if you get voted to the Supreme Court, you serve on the Supreme Court for, I don't know, 15 years, let's say. And then if you get to the end of your 15 years and you haven't retired, then it's time to appoint a new Supreme Court justice.
Nah.
And you can make those limits longer than a 2-term presidency and stagger them so that, you know, every 4 years, one person's term ends or whatever, something like that.
Well, if you're going to do that, then you'd have to have 40-year appointments and basically your lifetime appointment at that point. There's 9 justices on the Supreme Court. If you're going to have one per term, they would have to, 36-year appointments. One per presidential term.
And then maybe that won't work. Exactly. Like, that's the thing, is a lot of people make these suggestions and don't really consider don't really consider all of the problems and stuff like that.
So for a 15-year appointment, each president would, you know, if assuming he stuck in for 8 years, would be doing 3 or 4 justices on a 15-year right. term limit.
And, so. And also, look, and also in general, I question somebody's motives if they only if they suddenly discover this,
right?
Because it's and you know, like the, that thing about where before the election there was this whole scandal where like Trump said he, you know, he's not committing to accept the results of the election, and then those same people are now thinking of weird ways to get him, to have him deposed, to right. declare him mentally incompetent, and to fucking get the electors to vote Hillary. And it's like, you know, fuck you. Like if you were a lifelong electoral college activist and every election you'd be like, this is fucking unfair, right. whatever. Maybe, but like, the fact that they did this they went completely mm-hmm. the other way
yeah.
in a space of like a week. Was just mm-hmm.
and then I didn't get so my way. How can I game the system?
Yeah, and I've said before, I think I attack the left more harshly than the right because deep down I feel like I should be on the left, and like so I get frustrated when the left behaves in a way where like I don't want to be part of that.
I think part of that, Noam, is because you like me, and this is I'm going to speak in general terms here. The left tends to be a lot more emotional in their argument as opposed to the right tends to be a lot more, does this make sense? Can I logically figure out a reason why I'm doing this? Now, not in general, because then you've got some people on the extreme right saying, there's no evolution because I don't believe it. Yeah.
Well, and also, also there's a lot of the sort of the right. rabid Trump support, which is also based on like, fuck you. You know, it's based on different emotions. It's based right. on like, I'm doing this because of fuck you, because you did right. things that annoyed me for years and years. And now it's my turn.
Exactly. And I don't know the answer to this. I don't think we've had this. We've been talking about, like you said earlier on the show, this is shit we've been talking about for years and years, years and years.
Yeah. Yeah. And on and off of this podcast.
Yeah. This is not new.
Yeah. And like you said, there is a thing to be said. I think the word emotional is maybe not accurate. I think dispassionate is a good word. And you know what? We're both veterans and military doctrine. A lot of it is built around a measure of dispassion.
Right.
Because if you're going to send your men into combat, you know, a lot of them are going to die. But if a goal is important enough, you weigh that against the loss of life. That's a very, mm-hmm. that runs very contrary to emotion and back in the days where war was very personal, it also weighed very heavy. Fucking Lincoln was, you know, felt fucking horrible.
Well, that's why he spent half his time over at the soldier's home.
Yeah. Creating, you know, and writing letters to widows and stuff like that. Like it took a really heavy toll on him. And that was again, because that war was also extremely personal, and war now is very impersonal. You send a fucking drone mm-hmm. and it blows up a wedding by accident. Whose fault is that? Like nobody can sit there and go like, I created that, because the drone operator was operating according to intel, and the intel, maybe it was wrong, but how did the intel guy didn't know it was wrong. Right. The intel guy thought it was right. You know, it's like there is no person who would sit there and go like, I got those people killed. Right. The system got them killed,
you know? And the weird thing about it, you know, you're talking about Lincoln. I have had that thought once or twice. I'm like, look at what he went through for the, you know, the last few years of his life, you know, that period in history. I wonder if the very last thing that went through his mind, you know, when Booth was sitting up there pointing a gun at him is, you know what? I'm okay with this.
Oh, like, yeah, like, that's an interesting point. And I do know that there is a lot of like survivor's guilt among military commanders is a very known thing. There's a really good scene in Saving Private Ryan where they're talking about all the guys they lost mm-hmm. and what's his name has jars of dirt from all the places that they've been. And they kind of reminisce right. about all the people that died under their mm-hmm. command. That's a really good scene about that aspect right. of war, like I, you know, and also
well, the fucking, captain walking around with his bunch of dog tags too, you know.
Yes, yeah, oh right, sure. And also another movie, We Were Soldiers, the Mel Gibson movie, where his wife becomes the woman who's mm-hmm. in charge of delivering the death letters.
Right,
it's a lot, and so so the idea of like a dispassionate policy is, you know, it's hard. It's the harder, and that's what I said about Meryl Streep. There is, you know, it's not brave. It might be commendable to go up on an international platform and say what you believe in. Sure, commendable, but I don't know if it's brave.
No,
to
not
say
brave.
The thing I'm saying, to say the thing that everybody who is listening to you is also right. thinking.
Right, and but no, I mean, what I was talking about in that argument is that a lot of people that I follow on Facebook and all that kind of stuff were bitching about the fact that she did it in the first place.
Right.
You know, like she should just sit down and shut up. She's an actor. She doesn't get to have a voice.
And you know, I make a lot of those same arguments, but in a different context. I think that actors think that they're qualified to discuss things because they have big platforms, and they are not more qualified than other people. Certainly, they're just, their voices right. carry more. But again, like you said, the fact that she said a thing that I'm mm-hmm. fucking good for her. You know, maybe if I right. were her in her position, I would go up there and say, right. you know, stop talking shit about Israel. I don't right. know, like, but you know thing, what I mean? Like something that's right. close the, to
but
my.
But the thing that they're not realizing is that we are the ones demanding that we put microphones in front of celebrities' faces and let them put their views out to the world.
Yes. And so again, it's annoying. It's annoying if you just want to, because to me, the Oscar speech that I enjoy most, because this wasn't the Oscars, but you know what I mean, like the award speeches right. that I like the most, is when somebody like truly sort of discusses like their own feelings on right. this occasion, because a lot of them are like really, really honored, and you think right. like, and some of them are like, I, you know, I worked so fucking hard for this, and I was turned down a million, and my parents, you know, kept supporting right. me. I couldn't make any money and whatever. And now I'm here, and this is so amazing and whatever. Like, I love those.
I'm not disagreeing with you. I love those more than anything too. And I hate it when they get up and they talk political during the speeches. Like you said, but yet they have the right to do it. They're yes, just as qualified as you or me to do it. They just have a bigger microphone.
Yeah, and not only are they entitled to, like, I don't begrudge them that. Right. It ruins my fun, but what, you know,
exactly. whatever. Exactly. And that's what I kept trying to tell people. I said, look, bitch about the fact that they did it. Yes, that's fine. Don't tell them that they don't have the right to do it.
Right.
They're just as much right. of an American as you are. They get to voice their opinion.
Right. And also, by the way, all the people who are complaining and saying you're a fucking actor, great. So you're a fucking pipe fitter.
Exactly.
Like, what do you know about foreign policy? Yeah. Like, I understand that your life is hard. Also, it depends on what topic we're discussing. Because the thing I don't like is I don't like when rich people presume to know what hard life is, like hard day-to-day life, taxes.
Some of them, hold on. Not all rich people. Some rich people used to be poor, so they've been there.
Sure. No, sure. Sure. But also, like I said, if you take something like the PewDiePie incident, I'm like, look, the guy's a fucking millionaire. The people who fired him are millionaires. It's like, you can get annoyed on this, like on a principle level, but like, don't lose sleep over this mm-hmm. because they're both fine. Nobody's life is getting ruined right now. Right. You know, you don't have to go out and start burning shit because right. some millionaire isn't getting even way more millions right. than he's already getting.
Right. So basically what I'm trying to say, ladies and gentlemen, if you're actually still listening to this rant, is
I think this is good. A good therapy session.
Argue, yes. Fight for what you believe in, yes. Stop trying to deny people you disagree with their voice in the first place.
And I think we've said this before on this podcast when we were discussing, again, years ago, the fucking bake the fucking cake story, the original bake the fucking cake story.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Where they were forced to bake a cake for a gay man.
Oh, yeah.
And so we were saying that initially, like, shit, sorry, I got my train of thought got interrupted because I got a text message. I totally lost the point that I was going to make.
We were talking about denying them their voice and the bake a cake.
Never mind. Forget it. On that note,
I think I know what you were trying to say. You were trying to say that, I'm guessing here that those people lost their choice or their voice Are you still there?
Yeah, I know I'm here.
Okay, I don't know.
Never mind. I know. I don't know why I brought that specific thing up. But yeah, anyway, whatever. Let people look. Get angry at people. But don't, like you said, don't think that you're entitled to not have to hear things that you don't like.
Exactly.
You know, I think Louis C.K. said this one. He said, the world doesn't owe you a perfect day, a right. perfect experience.
Well, plus, too, the other thing to realize, too, is that you're perfectly entitled to your opinion. You're perfectly entitled to voice said opinion. You are not entitled for anybody to agree with you. You're not entitled for anybody to actually listen to you.
Yeah. And on that sage piece of advice, I think we're right at the end of this. This was nice.
It was.
I think this actually flowed nicely. I think we had a good kind of, like you said, it wasn't one topic. It was a bunch of topics all around the same.
Yeah, we just need to bitch about the what do you want to call it? The
I mean, it's all the same big garbage fire now. You know.
Yeah.
And I, you know what,
and next
I
week,
hope
I guess
that,
we got to figure out how to fix it. That's our mission for next show.
I was going to say, let's just talk about movies or whatever.
Movies, yeah.
In two weeks, I'm going to go see Logan, and then we can just talk about X-Men.
We did exactly what we said we never did on this thing, people. We just bitched and moaned and didn't offer any solutions, although I think we did.
You know, I think, no, I, you know what, I think we're good at, if not, it's not that we solve the problem, but I think that we help give like a good perspective where if you're confronted by a situation like that, you maybe won't escalate it or as you would have initially. That's, I try to do that. Now I don't always succeed, but sometimes I look at a situation where I see can go really south and I'm like, yeah, let's try a different approach.
Right.
You know,
and watch out. Right. Maybe we're going to change the name of the podcast to Staffu.
Staffu. I like that. Right? Staffu Radio.
Yep. All right, guys. Thanks for listening. Hopefully next time Ben will be here. He was actually planning on we're going to have all four of us this time, but then Neil died and
Neil died. An asteroid hit Iowa and killed everyone there.
Right. Utah. Utah.
Idaho. Wyoming.
Yeah, it's the same thing. They're all in the middle. You fly over them every time, right?
Got buried by a big pile of potatoes.
Potatoes, yeah.
It was a horrible accident.
At the vodka plant. That's what.
It was a tubing accident. That was so bad. Worst joke ever. Oh, yeah. All right, guys.
All right, we're out. Bye.
Bye.
Roy McVeigh asks, what is the kill casualty radius of my knife hand? Well, right, I would tell you that once you get to be a high-ranking officer, the kill casualty radius is whatever your Marines make it. And by the time I got up to a senior ranks, it was hundreds of miles. But I would just tell you that I remain humbled that I was able to stay in the Marine Corps so long when young Marines like you would make that kill casualty radius very deep in enemy territory and carry out the Marines' mission in a way that by the time you're a high-ranking officer, basically your reputation is carried, made by you young Marines who went into the fights with the enemy. So the kill casualty radius, as far as you can throw it there, young man. Thank you.